Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below. In this interview, me and Benedict discuss something rarely covered, which honestly surprises me constantly: the profitability of regenerative and non-regenerative farmers. And does a farmer really need transition finance to start or to speed up their regenerative transition? Find out more as we dig deeper, pun definitely intended, into the connection between farm profitability and regenerative agriculture practices. Welcome to Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food. This is a special dedicated series on transition finance. Why are we recording this series? Many farmers are ready to speed up their regenerative transition. They've looked for learning, done the courses, read the key books, hosted the gurus on their farms, explored farm-sized regenerative designs, and most importantly, started their pilots and feedback loops. This is where transition finance is key. A local bank loan often isn't feasible because of the short duration, lack of flexibility, and the farmer's lack of collateral. Furthermore, there's a limit of how much equity a farmer is able or willing to give away. That is why my co-host, aspiring to be regenerative farmer, Benedict Boesel, and I are embarking on a journey to find out what are the key principles of transition finance for regenerative farmers. We are interviewing leading practitioners in the regenerative agriculture and food finance space. They share their insights how they would finance the speed up of the regenerative transition on Benedict's 1,000 hectares, which is almost 2,500 acres, farm in Germany close to Berlin. This is an open process. We are sharing our lessons through the podcast episodes as we go along. We don't have the answers yet, just a lot of questions. So please share with us any examples of transition finance you've seen, other inspiration, people to interview, etc. Get in touch via the contact page on the website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com. That is investinginregenerativeagriculture.com. Welcome, Nicolas Verschuren, co-founder of Soil Capital. And of course, welcome, Benedict Boesel, my co-host.
Hello, Koen.
Hi, Koen. Hi, Nicolas.
I'm looking forward to this discussion as we are taking it back to the farm and diving a bit deeper in what a regenerative transition means, both obviously for the farm of Benedict, but also for a lot of farms our guest has seen in his experience. And we're very much looking forward to dive a bit deeper into that. So first of all, I think, Nicolas, could you briefly introduce yourself and Soil Capital? I mean, we've had you actually in a short interview, which we recorded live in Groundswell last year, which is not happening this year, but just a brief introduction into your background so we know who you are, and then we're going to unpack a bit of farming business.
Yes, so I am agronomist and we are based in Belgium. I've been passionate about farming since I'm very, very young. And I'm involved in what we call now regenerative agriculture for the last, 15, 20 years with my partners here in Belgium where we are farming, but also now with the Soil Capital team that we founded with my colleague, my partner, 5 years ago. So basically, I'm working in the field as a farmer here in Belgium and as an agronomist outside of Belgium with a Soil Capital team.
And just a brief, I mean, I will share the article you just published, or just, I think, a month ago, published on farming, profitability, regenerative agriculture with actually a number of farmers that you're working with in Belgium. Can you give a very brief stint of where you are now with Soil Capital? What is Soil Capital? We're speaking April 2020. What is Soil Capital currently busy with?
We are still focused on how to scale regenerative agriculture across the world, if I may say, how we can participate to that development. We are still involved in several operations, helping farm managers to transition their farm into regenerative agriculture, Latin America, Europe, a little bit in Africa as well. And we are, for the last few months, as you were referring to the article we published a few weeks ago, also trying to explore ways to measure better the way farmers are performing economically, and also with another indicator, which is the carbon, to understand how the farmers are able to transition their farm economically and also regarding the carbon balance. We are now working on a tool to help farmers and agronomists to understand where they are and how they can improve, how they can benchmark themselves against the local community, and how to give them guidelines to transition their farm. So that's one of the focus for the moment with part of the team.
And if I remember correctly from the article, there was a very interesting connection, I'm not saying correlation, but connection between the profitability and the carbon levels. Like the farms that had the highest carbon levels in their soil also were the most profitable. Again, not saying that the two are, they're connected, but we don't know what causes what or what other variables are at play. But at least it shows that the question that everybody asks constantly, like, can this be done profitably?
Yeah, so this is really our guideline at Soil Capital. We are strongly convinced that we can farm more profitably while doing good for nature and storing carbon in the soil. It is clear that this is maybe not the easiest way, but what shows the first results now with around 50, 60 farms that we are working with and that we are analyzing with this tool is that most of the time the farms who are the most profitable are also the most successful at sequestering carbon. It's not always the case, but it means that there are ways to do it. And this is where we are really interested. We want to understand better those farms. We want to also to make those techniques, those examples available for the others.
Let me just jump in there real quick, because I think this is such a crucial point you mentioned. You know, the question always is, if it's so good and valuable, why isn't everyone doing it? From the experience that you have speaking to so many farmers, what would you say, what are like the biggest barriers to entry for those farmers starting the transition to more regenerative ways, let's say?
I think that there are many reasons, but the main reason for me and for us at Soil Capital, it's the money, the profitability. I think that most of the farmers in Europe or in the other continents are struggling. The margins are very thin. And so any additional risk or additional changes that you bring to the farm is putting a high risk on the margin, on the salary of the farmer. And so this is why we really believed that there is a strong connection between the capability of a farmer to change and the guarantee or his capability also to generate more revenue, more margin, more profit. For me, it's a big bottleneck. So we are working mostly on the farm and not on the market. So we believe that farmer and a farming operation can be transitioned into regenerative agriculture only if the economics are improved from day one. We already discussed that with Koen a few times. And if we want to scale this kind of farming practices, we need to find ways to make it profitable on a very short term. And we can discuss that after if you want to understand how to make it.
Yeah, I think it would be great. I mean, people would listen to this and say, yeah, but you just said their profitability is so low now. Farmers on most continents you're working on are struggling. The margins are very thin, indebtedness, policy changes, a lot of different things. So if we don't wait for a market to change in the sense that we start paying more for certain types of regenerative grain or certain types, which is a lot of discussions are happening on that space. If you say, okay, let's take it as a given that that's not happening yet, or it would be great if it does, but we cannot control that. So how then do you transition a farmer that is struggling, that might be listening to this, or somebody that knows a farmer that is listening to this? What are the steps? What are the first steps? You obviously generalizing because it depends on the context, but what are central themes you always see coming back if you work with a farmer in Argentina or you work with a farmer in Belgium?
Nicolas, before you answer this question, let me just jump in right there, because there's one overall question that lies basically above this. And it's you can only answer with yes or no, please. This is the task. But everything considered we just said and what you're going to answer respective Koen's questions, do you believe farmers need transition finance? Yes or no?
No.
That's what I was fearing you might say. But no.
Why fearing? That's the central theme of the podcast. We're not saying you should. Well, if you take it,
probably because we do a podcast series on transition finance. Because it is a question that is on my concern as well. You know, I have two hearts in my chest, if you want. But Nicolas, I'd be really interested to hear how you would answer Koen's questions, because I think they're really fundamental. But I just wanted to get that one out.
You pushed me to answer one word, and of course, this is impossible. This is very restrictive. I would say that on my end, I strongly believe that you can transition without external finance. That's more the answer. But we also understand that if you want to transition massively and fast, that money is necessary to push to help farmers who don't have the enough confidence, enough support, enough whatever. So, yeah, you understand behind this answer.
So what would be the steps then? If, let's say, let's take it as a given that a hypothetical farmer doesn't want to take or cannot take or is not confident to take outside capital. What's your approach? Again, depending on the context, but what are some general approaches you usually use?
Yeah, I think that it's also coming from maybe from the character of the farmers who are normally very independent and self-sustaining. And this is why we are coming from this world also. And this is why there is a big part of myself who hate to be supported by somebody else to transition, to do something, to develop your own business, to do your changes. So we've been educated with the subsidy from the European Union, and we see where we are now. So this massive amount of money that has been spent with, on my view, not enough changes and or nearly no changes on the ground. So this is why I'm afraid when we talk about financing, external hands coming to help the farmer. And this is why our reflex in our company at the beginning and still now is always to say, okay, what are the internal solutions that we can find in the farm with the farmer, with an independent agronomist helping the farmer to think and to work on the business more than in the business. And the main lever that we have today are the agrochemicals and the external inputs that are purchased by the farmers. And in most of the farm that we are working with, I would say that this is always the case. There is an overuse. It's maybe not the right word, but the usage of this external input, the inputs that are purchased by the farmers are not efficient. And this is where you can start tapping into, trying to get additional dollars or euro, recovering some additional euros and dollars to start financing your own transition. So agrochemicals or external inputs are the first one where you can, from our experience, start saving some money.
Yeah, I think it's a crucial point you're making. Many farmers, I mean, there are two very crucial points. First of all, is that independent agronomists, and obviously that's connected to the input because they are selling that. In many countries, some countries, that's actually, they're starting to decouple that. But many farmers, when we talk about farmers, we never talk about their agronomists, but many times they are a team. And if the farmer wants to do something and the agronomist doesn't agree, or the other way around, it's very difficult to get any changes. And if you don't have an independent agronomist, obviously they must be paid by someone, meaning they're paid by the input companies. And I always see it as, I don't know, Shell or any other oil company is going to help me save petrol, or like, look, we're selling you something that you're going to use less of. That probably doesn't happen. So that means that there is extra space, like they're selling you extra inputs if they want it or not. Then maybe they use a recipe that's not perfect for your farm. So you're saying there is always space, or there seem to be usually space in the inputs that are coming into the farm. And that's the first lever you have to reduce that without hurting your yields, and thus reducing your cost basically directly, and thus having some extra space, some extra margin, some extra money in the bank that you can use for pilots, for your regenerative transition financed by yourself.
Right. I think you're explaining that much better than me. There is another point also, because to convince a farmer that he could use his input more efficiently, it's tough, because there is in general a relationship of dependency or trust also, history, between the farmer and his advisor. And the farmer, because he's in a risky situation, in a very low margin business, he is in general very reluctant to change any of the ingredients that he has around him. He knows that if he's changing something, there is a high risk that the plus 5% of margin or the plus 3% of margin he's doing will be transformed into a minus 2 or 3 or 5 very quickly. So by definition, in a situation where he's afraid to change any of those ingredients. And one of the things, this is why we are working now, focusing on dashboard, on metrics more than ever, is that the farmers, in terms of economic, doesn't have a clear view on what's happening on the farm. The farm is a complex system with a lot of interactions. And the farmer is also super busy at making the operation going well. The paperwork has been increased more and more the last few years. So there are a lot of farmers who doesn't know about their production costs. They know about the yields, they know about the acreage, they know about many things. But when it comes to calculate and to really understand the production costs and to with the idea to benchmark that and to have a discussion with others to understand where they are, to understand where they can improve, it's very rare. And so this is where we are working now, trying to define and to help the farmer to understand better his figures. Economical figures first and operational figures after.
But could you go a bit more into depth to the actual discussion you have with the farmer? Basically, you drive on the farm, you have a tour, you discuss certain things and try to get a feeling and understanding of the process and system that particular farmer is running. But how is the talk developing between the two of you? How are you trying to convince them? How are you trying to change his thinking? Because, I mean, this is what it, in the end of the day, is, right? I mean, you can tell him, look, you can reduce this and that, and this might have this or that effect, but doesn't he really have to kind of experience it and see it and live through it in order to then be open to changing, really, or taking that risk? Can you explain a bit more on that, the actual process of talking and communicating with the farmer and convincing, I guess?
Yeah, so maybe we are fortunate for the moment to work with farmers who are coming to us with this first step of being convinced that something has to be done is already done, is already achieved, thanks to people like Kuhn or other who are trying to explain and to communicate to farmers and other people of the community what's happening and the benefit. There are now more and more people who are questioning their system. So I think that's one thing.
Step one is done. Yeah, something needs to change. But then the question is what? Yeah, and how?
Yeah, most of the time we don't have to preach and start convincing.
Luckily, because that's very tiring.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that it's easy because, as I was saying, the economical situation, balance of the farm is most of the time, I would say always, very tight. So the margin is not important. But again, the first discussion that we have with the farmer, it's a very simple discussion about economics. And say, okay, you know about the principle of regenerative agriculture. We know that we have to limit the tillage. We know that we have to cover the soil and blah, blah, blah. This is quite clear for everybody. How can we start implementing some of those principles into your farm without adding additional cost? And one of the principles of the regenerative agriculture, again, it's trying to decrease, to optimize the usage of agrochemical. We know that fungicide, insecticides in particular, damageable for the soil and the ecosystem and the biodiversity. So this is the first discussion we have. What sort of fungicide, what sort of insecticide are you using on your farm? And as I was saying just before, this is the first way to optimize because I can say that in most of the case, we can start saving by just using those input better between 10 and 30, 40% of those agrochemicals. So that's the first step.
So just to summarize, you're saying that most farms you meet are overusing or are not using efficiently, so they could save between 10 and 30 to 40% of their, let's say, chemical input, insecticides and fungicides, which is a lot of money because that's cash out of the door in a second, basically. And these are farmers that are already aware of soil, etc. So they're probably not even the ones that are wasting the most.
And it's coming from different factors. So you have first the way you're using the pesticides. And I know that it can be shocking for people who are listening about regenerative agriculture, wants to go into regenerative agriculture, who have been inspired by Kuhn and the other, that the first discussion you have with an agronomist from Soil Capital is to talk about the fungicide.
But that's reality. That's where we start. Yeah.
And the quality of application, the way you're applying pesticides is definitely one of the big factors to improve it. You would be surprised to see, to understand how many farmers today want to change, doesn't really, they haven't been informed that there are ways to apply those chemicals where you can really save quantity, the quality of the water you're using, the climate when you're applying, the type of molecule that are not always the same. That's one thing. The second thing is the way they are purchasing, because most of the farmers are working on a very individual base. So they are not negotiating their price. They're buying alone and they're not using the group effect, the group power to to buy in a more efficient way. So we are also trying to, in places like Belgium, for example, where we have more farmers, or in other places, to group the farmers together to try to help them to buy better, because this is nothing to do with the regenerative agriculture principle, but this is also a good way to start saving some money.
And connecting the farmers to each other.
Yeah, connecting the farmers around one vision. And by the way, you can also connect farmers in this case who are not interested about regenerative agriculture, but who are coming to you because they are interested just to save money. And this is you create a good momentum to start discussing not only about pesticides and tenders and group purchase, but talking about soil and soil. And that's a second way to save money. And once you've saved your 20 to 60, 70 euro per hectare in a grain operation, or in Argentina or in Belgium, France, or even in Africa, you start collecting some money, you have a budget to start investing for the longer term. And the longer term for me is your cover crop. That's one thing that the farmers generally don't want to step in because it's an additional cost. So most of the time, they're just following the rules, the local legislation. So, okay, I'm going to do I'm forced in Europe to plant some cover crops. So I'm going to do some mustards, 5 kilo per hectare, 10 euros per hectare. And it's going to be, I'm going to be okay with the legislation, but they will have no effect on the soil. And with this additional money, you can convince the farmers, okay, let's invest a part of your saving that we just achieved with your chemicals into a better cover crop, because this is something that will pay in the coming years. And maybe let's do it really seriously, and let's do it only on 10% of your acreage with a very good multi-species cover crop, so that we push we increase the chance to really have a fast payback and a fast observation that you can see in the field, and that's a second step. Another part of this longer term effect is also to start talking with the farmers about the rotation. And most of the farmers are not producing some crop that are less profitable, and with an additional budget that you're creating with these input savings, you can convince also the farmers, okay, let's start producing again some oats or some barley or some legumes that you were not producing for the last few years because it's not the most profitable crop on the short term. And let's reintroduce some of those crop on 1 hectare, 5 hectares, 10 hectares, just to understand that those crop, this additional crop will have an effect also on your soil and on your production cost on the longer term. So that's the way to prime the pump and to step into the journey of regenerative farming. And the good news is that in most of the case, the farmer after 1 year, 1 year and a half, 2 years, when the pump is starting to work, you don't need to push them anymore. They start seeing more clearly than us where their system is going, and most of the time they will come back to you and say, okay, actually I've increased before you ask me the acreage of cover crop. I've started to share some equipment with my neighbor, and the motivation is coming back. So that's a general average observation that we have with the different clients.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. I think that was quite interesting because it shows the different ways to go at it. You mentioned long term. So when you talk about that transition phase, what kind of time span are you thinking of?
This is really a discussion, and depending of the people, because you have many farmers who are, as I was saying, not able to transition fast because they don't want to increase the risk. They don't have the money. In this case, the long term is, I would say, between 3, 5, 7 years. Where you can really say, okay, I'm really ticking the boxes of all the principle of regenerative agriculture. Even if it's not binary, there is always, it's always a little bit blur, but we can agree that you are into this system. Some other farmers we are working with are more are interested to go faster because they have they want to finance that themselves. So they say, okay, I understand that I'm putting my operation with a high risk. I'm ready to finance that. And this is maybe where external finance or additional farmer finance can help. And then you can go faster. And I would say in 3 years you can probably make big steps in this transition. I would say that our preference in the soil capital environment ecosystem is to go as I was saying, without external finance, without having the farmer forced to tap into savings, without having the farmers forced to take high risk, because of course there are many risks around the farming system. The climate is there, the market as well, and if you're not in the right at the right moment, you can really take a serious hit if you want to go too fast. I don't know if I answer your question, but let's say 3-5 years. And what we have to remember, I think, is that we don't accept the fact that those 3-5 years would be years with less profitability than the year -1, -2, -3. So that's the main rule for us.
I think this is so crucial. And you mentioned early on that it's also about developing KPIs and having strong numbers to relate to and to go back to and to analyze throughout like a certain time span throughout that transition. Because, you know, the thing is like, how do you define success after a couple of years? I mean, obviously you have a shovel and you will probably hopefully see. But on the economic side, you know, if farmers are not that aware of the economics, especially regarding production costs, like how can they actually tell, obviously, other than what they see outside? And I think because what we often come across when we have visitors here, we give them a farm tour basically and look at some of those agroforestry systems. And, you know, most of the farmers often come around the area and they are all aware of the problems that we have with, you know, regarding drought, regarding erosion, wind erosion, water erosion, extreme weather conditions. And nearly all of them say, well, I think agroforestry is amazing. I think there's a huge potential there. But none of them will ever start implementing anything if they don't have reliable calculations to work with, right? So I think it's so crucial. And in the beginning, you spoke about, you know, scaling regenerative ag. And I mean, this is, you know, why Koen and me are doing this, because we believe we have to and we need to, and this could be a part of it. But the question is the whole, the scientific as well as the numeric, how do you solve monitoring of those processes is, I don't know how you see that, but that sometimes it's coming a bit short. So we need those reliable numbers. So I think, you know, thinking about KPIs, thinking about ways of actually making that transition somehow be reflected in numbers and experiences, I think that's going to be so crucial for the next couple of development phases, I guess.
Yes, and on that point, I come back on what we're trying to develop now, this tool that we've called My Soil Capital.
I will link to it below in the show notes for anybody that wants to check it out.
It came from a frustration, internal frustration as well, to not being able to monitor ourselves and to also increase our capability to convince farmer and to drive farmer in the right direction. So it is a tool for the agronomist, mostly for the farm manager, and we've decided to oversimplify today the system and the KPIs to talk, as I was saying, first about the cost of production and to analyze where is good, where is not good, where you can improve compared to your peers, and the second part is the carbon. And we believe that today, in a very simplistic way, all the different KPIs of the regenerative agriculture principle could be summarized in this carbon balance. We believe today it's very restrictive, I agree, and we are working on other metrics to make that a little bit more complete. But we believe that if you do a carbon balance of the farm at feed level, you will have a very good idea of how many tons of carbon you're sequestering in your soil, basically, because this is the only way for the farmer to sequester. You have also, with the carbon balance, a quite good idea of what sort of intensity in terms of input, nitrogen usage, external nitrogen you're using. So we believe that it's a good metric. And this is, as you were saying, Benedict, I think we see this kind of tool, of metric, very necessary to go faster, to limit the risk as well, to be able to communicate, to be able to, yeah, to talk with your neighbor, to compare yourself with other, and just much better than of course counting the earthworms or doing a tour of the farm with your neighbor, which is very important as well to start the journey. But we also have to understand that today there are many farmers who understand the principles, or even very conventional farmers who knows that, but they don't know where they are, and they don't know. And year after year, they see this transition in 3, 4, 5, 7 years, and it's very important that the farmer can year after year understand that he made a few percentage of effort there, and there is a few kilos of nitrogen more, and of CO2 more sequestered, and there are a few euros saved on the other part, and I think that we need to see. We believe that we need to see to be much more granular in the future to accompany this farmer into this transition.
Yeah, and you said something very interesting there. I mean, a lot of very interesting points. But the peer part, because it's so far, I mean, people can visit a farm, do a farm tour, visit Benedict or somebody else that has been doing pieces of the regenerative transition, is increasing cover crops, etc. But if you can see that your neighbor or somebody down the road who has very similar weather, obviously, unless you have an enormous farm, maybe in Australia, but is doing much better financially with just between brackets, because it's obviously not just, but just a different management and actually being financially much more profitable. Normally, maybe you would have seen it because somebody bought a new car, etc. But if you can actually benchmark yourself with somebody down the road that is in the same system as you or the same context, how powerful is that? Can you explain a bit the peer part of this journey?
Yeah. Again, it starts from the farm and the fact that the farmers are, for me, too isolated because of many reasons. The workload, the fact that they are independent, and the land also competition with the neighbors. So most of the farmers will not easily discuss about figures like economic.
No, they discuss about yield. Everybody's always like, I did that, but nobody ever discusses the cost part to that.
Yeah, and I think it's difficult to share that kind of information with your neighbor. Mostly if you're trying to hope that you can buy the land of the neighbor in the future, because there is so much competition of the land on the land. That's another discussion, but I think it's coming also from the system and the way we are farming.
So how do you overcome that fear of sharing my profitability or my numbers?
Just by, in this tool, just by aggregating the results of the neighbor, we are, the data are protected. So you can see the results of your farm, because that's part of the exercise. And together with the results of your farm, you're going to see the average result of your of the farmers of your region. And you can define the perimeter if you want to have a close radius of a big or bigger radius. And also we've extracted the best 25% in terms of cost of production. So you're going to see that as well.
But you don't know which one it is. You cannot, obviously, on privacy reasons. It's a bit like the, I think they did it for energy use in households. Some, I don't remember where in the US, like you've been using on average, like you got a smiley, you've been using less than your average household in your neighborhood, or you've been using a lot more. And they actually saw that people adjusted to that peer pressure of the peers they didn't know or they couldn't identify. But it's, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and basically it's not adding much to understand who are the people behind the best farmers of bike. It can be interesting for your curiosity, but I think that the moment you understand that you are better or worse than the best, and if you through the analysis of those information, you can understand why you are better or worse. That's for us already interesting and powerful enough to make people thinking and to make agronomists and farm manager changing the way they are operating.
No, it's extremely powerful. And what are the next steps for this? I mean, you said simplified, I think, a number of times that you can make it more complex, but you're mostly, I mean, the article, I think is mostly, or the first pilot is mostly on Belgium. And what are your plans with this My Soil Capital, with this dashboard, with this service? Is it open to all farmers? Should people call if they're in Spain, if they're east of Berlin, like Benedict? What's the current status and the plan?
So the plan on the very short term is to continue the development of the tool in a close radius around us, because we have access to farmers and we can co-develop with farmers that we know, fine-tune the tool. France, Belgium, on the medium term, a few months, we'll translate the tool in English so that we can extend the perimeter, because we have a few farmers and farmers association in UK, for example, who are interested to start discussing about these dashboard. That's on the perimeter. We are also discussing with a few companies related to agriculture or not, who wants to who see carbon and carbon sequestration as something interesting. So in parallel, we are trying to build a discussion with these people to see if at some point in the future they could come with extra financing for farmers to reward the farmers who wants to go who did a good job or wants to go faster. And what we also are aiming to do in the short term is to come with additional indicators to complete the carbon picture with indicators like just to be for the agronomist or the farmer who analyzes his information to understand where he should why he's better, why he's not as good as the best producers. So the rotation diversity, the usage of certain agrochemicals, the land coverage, the soil disturbance. We have already the fuel consumption, the number of hours spent in the tractors. So we are working on those information also to make the discussion between the agronomist and the farmer, or us and the farmer, richer and more clear in terms of what should you change in your operation if you want to reach the best performer.
Just having a question, wanting to hear your view on this, maybe also on a long term, because the whole discussion on carbon sequestration and earning basically additional income for farmers if they do store more carbon in the soil, it has such an incredible hype. Obviously, TerraTron and Indigo, they are pushing it on that sort of international level. But I mean, there's like, I would know about 10 to 15 different groups that are trying to build a business around this idea. And I've spoken to quite a few of those. And often it's young people who are incredibly well gifted and they come from an interdisciplinary approach. And I mean, what I always tell them, or what I try to show them, is that just focusing on carbon, we tend to, I believe we tend to do the same kind of mistake that we usually try to do it. Because we are talking about a complex ecosystem, right? And carbon is one of many. And if we think about monetizing something else, you know, but what I think we should do, what farmers are bringing, you know, to the ecosystem, but also to us as people in general, don't we have to look at it, you know, much broadly and think about all those different ecosystem functions where aesthetics, for example, is a part of as well as a social component. And like, obviously, you know, the whole carbon thing is much easier to capture, I guess, and then monetize it. But don't we have to look at a much bigger picture, and don't we have to do today in order to, you know, develop the solution sooner than later? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I'm probably not the best person to answer that in the team, because we have one person who is working on that more than me. But what I can see, fully agree with you, carbon is a very restrictive way of measuring the performance of a farm, and any tricky farmer could think very quickly how to store carbon without being regenerative at all, and how to do it fast. So I agree with you that this is something that is not enough to measure or to classify farms. But I think that, remember that the price of the carbon today is very low. So it will not be with the price of carbon of CO2 of 15, 20, 25, even 30 euro per ton sequestered. And when you understand that a regenerative farm probably will sequester between 2 and 3, 4 tons per hectare per year, it makes less than or around 100 euro per hectare of difference, which is for me totally, absolutely not enough to make people to change. It can help. But it's not enough. So I believe that together with this carbon thing, we will in the future discuss with sophisticated companies, impact investors, or people in the farming ecosystems, where that we understand that the carbon is a good metric, but together with the carbon, there are many other benefits that could be attached, like the biodiversity, like the soil erosion, like the water quality, a little bit like Jeroen Klomp, and they're trying to measure these natural benefits and quantify and make it more also valuable. So I believe that in our developed country, we will have opportunity, and farmers will have opportunity to be paid more for additional services. And I'm not obsessed by receiving more from external companies, as I was saying at the beginning. But I think that it will make things more clear for external for people outside of farming that carbon is not everything. And I think that this will help this carbon discussion to be a little bit more richer. The certification to be also more a little bit more sophisticated in the future, and more rewarding for farmers who want to change, who are making efforts, for those who need that extra money. But I understand, but I still think that the carbon sequestration measure is probably not the less worst entry point.
Yeah, and just FYI, we're going to interview Jeroen Klompe, founder of Soil Heroes, soon on the podcast. So you should be, if you're listening to this, I don't know, when there could be an interview already online, so you can check it out.
Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Nicholas. And I think, yeah, I mean, I agree. Although I do think that when you refer to third-party capital, let's say, I think there is quite a lot to come, and not necessarily in a transition finance way, but like just realizing, you know, what what we are in our little bubble here in and around Berlin, and the companies that we are in contact with, and even people, you know, who are we in contact with, there's such an incredible value, and there's such an incredible, yeah, also sense of value and understanding of, you know, the kind of things that we try to do here on the farm and why we're trying to do it. So the companies, large companies.
Yeah, we just got a message. Remember, even from
a private
person yesterday through the website, I want to do a shout out to Jens. Thank you very much for the message. I sent it to Benedict. Somebody reached out that wants to donate some money to plant a number of hedgerows because he's a beekeeper, sees the biodiversity going down and wants to donate some money to Benedict. And we're going to figure out how to increase biodiversity. Very small example, but it does show there is something happening on that front, both small and big.
Yeah. And I think, you know, letting people take part in the experiences that we have, being outside, planting the trees themselves, that brings an immediate connection to the space. It even has some spiritual element of well-being for those kind of people. And it's even for companies. So I think, you know, there is actually great potential for farmers to also think in that direction. So, I just wanted to give a statement there in this way, because I think, you know, we can be really positive about farming, and we can be really positive about the way that we're trying to develop into, you know, because we're doing good stuff. I mean, you know, biodiversity is growing, you know, the countryside is thriving, the nature is thriving. It just makes sense, and people realize that and people value that. So I am actually really positive about that.
Yeah, I've been too extreme, but we have the time is limited, so it's difficult to discuss about all the exceptions or small case and we at Soil Capital we're working with large scale farmers most of the time, so the connection with the people, the connection with the consumers are completely lost. People who are heavily subsidized, seeing the money coming back from the community through subsidies and so on. So it, clearly, there are different kind of agriculture. And just to give the example of our small operations in Belgium, my partner and I are farming on a small area. He has a butchery. And there is a strong connection with the local community. I clearly value also the fact that at a very local scale, like the one we have in Belgium, you can create a very interesting impact, and the people, the consumers, can really help the farmer to develop to transition, and they are much more rewarding and less skeptical and difficult than what you could think while reading the newspaper or Facebook and so on. They will understand that sometime in a conventional farm you're going to use some glyphosate, for example, or they will understand that you cannot be working 100% on feed coming from the farm because you're not producing all the protein yet. And they will understand clearly that your vision and the direction you want to take, and that you cannot go there in one day. So all of this, I think it's definitely those are meaningful example and necessary experience and pilot to be ahead of the curve and to influence the other. But for the large scale farming that we are where we are involved mostly. At Soil Capital or bigger farmer, I'm not talking about only people who got 1,000 hectares or 2,000 hectares, but a farm of 150 hectares or 100 hectares in Belgium or in France today, it's a big operation who is selling 90% or 99% on commoditized on the commodity market, producing wheat export and meat to export and milk to export. And so this is another discussion, and we haven't discussed about markets, and that I think is was not the purpose of the discussion. But clearly, there is another part of our efforts at Soil Capital to work on the market and how to decommoditize in the future all those production and work with clients to do that. But that's another step, another additional revenue, another financing way to accelerate the transition that we can definitely explore in another discussion. But today, I think that what I wanted to highlight is really the fact that with the current market, with the current system, how can we improve at FarmGate without talking about the additional revenue that can be generated by such an initiative.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for that, being conscious of your time. We definitely will come back on the market piece and another time. I think we always end up at about an hour and feeling, I at least feel that we scratched the surface, pun definitely intended. And talking about scratching the surface, Benedict has to go because he has to pick up 600 chickens. We're going to scratch a lot of surface.
Baby chickens.
So it's a very exciting day. It's a very exciting day. Baby chickens, yeah. So I want to thank you so much, Nicolas, for sharing. You've been on the podcast in a very short form. Luckily, we had more time this time to go deeper. Still not enough, obviously, because there's so much knowledge and so much you've seen and you've done in the space. But thank you for coming on, sharing your knowledge, your experience, your opportunities, your doubts, etc. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Koen, and thank you, Benedict. And really, congratulations for the work you're doing, because as I was saying during the podcast, we see the value of that while having clients or farmers calling us and saying, okay, we've been in touch, or touched by messages, by information, for bringing us to think about changing our system. So you're doing a great job.
Thank you so much for that.
Right on, Koen.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode, which is part of the Transition Finance series, trying to find appropriate transition finance to speed up regenerative agriculture on farms. For feedback, ideas, suggestions, please contact us through Twitter or via the contact page on the website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com. Please share this episode with a friend and give us a 5-star rating, which really helps others to find the podcast. All the episodes of the series can be found on the website and in your podcast app. Thank you, and see you next time.